The New Testament reading is taken from the Gospel of St. Luke. Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Peter did not know what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my Son, my chosen, listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and the disciples kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things that they had seen. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
So David, there's the little remote.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
Well, first of all, may I thank you all very much for the very warm welcome. And on behalf of everybody associated with Wilmslow Wells for Africa, say how much we do appreciate your support through your Lent giving campaign. I'd really like to tell you a little bit more about the charity. Well, first of all, to explain just what it is that we do, we bring fresh water and more recently sanitation to remote African communities who previously depended on a distant supply of water, and very often that was contaminated. That means that women and children no longer have to make this long daily trip, often taking 2 to 3 hours, and they're often carrying the water on their heads. And often that trip is through quite dangerous country or an area where they can be threatened by unpleasant people, let's say. In addition to the significant health and safety improvements, the communities concerned have a lot more time available because they're not having to commit so much time every day to making these journeys. And then other things can happen like education, homemaking, and agriculture. Since it began in 1984, last year we celebrated our 40th anniversary, the charity has raised over £1.7 million, and that has funded 387 projects across 20 different African countries. It's hard when you're talking about figures, but we believe that a conservative estimate is that we have provided a safe supply of clean water to over 650,000 people. That's an average cost of less than £3 per person. It just goes to show that you can do an awful lot with quite a small sum of money when you're working in some of these places. And of course, the wells serve quite large communities. Because the charity is totally volunteer-run, the overhead is kept to a minimum. And that's one of the things that Wilmslow Wells has always maintained. That means that 99.3%, at least, of every pound that comes in is going directly into the projects. This is Brenda Mottershead. She was the founder of Wilmslow Wells. I won't go into the detail of her story, but it is quite an interesting story, and I've put some copies of the book that we prepared last year to mark the 40th anniversary. And if you're interested, you can take a copy and read all about it. But basically, she went to South Africa in the early 1980s with her husband because his job, he was posted there on his job. And it was really while she was there that she became so concerned about the conditions that black people were living in the townships in South Africa, that when she got back to Wilmslow, she decided that she had to do something about it. And she called together a meeting of people. A lot of them were based in her church, at St. Bart's Church in Wilmslow. And they decided that the best thing that they could do was to try to bring water to some of these communities, because if they had water, then they could develop and do other things. So she was also a strong personality. It was her that laid down that the charity should be volunteer run. And she also got a number of fundraising activities going, and those have continued. Some of you may have been over to Wilmslow at the end of June when we have Gardens Day, for example. That now has grown to such an extent. There's usually about 20 gardens open around Alderley and Wilmslow and Handforth. And last year it raised nearly £20,000 in one day, which, you know, it goes to show what can happen with all the different things. But there are a number of other fundraising events. And just to give you an idea, of the 1.7 million, probably two-thirds comes from donations that people are making, and then one-third is coming from these sorts of events. Next Saturday, for example, at the Methodist Church, there's a super day where people come and just pay £5 or something, and they have a soup lunch which people are preparing. We also believe it's very important to communicate to everybody who's donating to Wilmslow Wells how the money is being spent, and in particular the news that comes back from Africa, you know, when a project has been successfully completed. So there is a website, and there's also a newsletter which comes out twice a year in the autumn and in the spring. We've got one that's just about to come out in the next couple of weeks. In order to deliver the projects, clearly if we're all volunteers, we can't be going over to Africa and checking on everything and supervising, overseeing what's going on. So we work through a number of other charities who are based locally in the different parts of Africa. And we've now built up a very good relationship, probably with about 40 different charities. And it does mean that when you're working for the second time with a charity, it's much easier than doing it for the first time. So we're able to do more work through having continued relationship with existing charities. Many of those have come to our, almost all of them have come to our AGMs. We have a meeting every autumn, and they can speak about the work that they're doing so that we can all hear firsthand what's going on. It is also quite extraordinary when you hear or when you see these people and the dedication that they show, often living in very difficult conditions in remote parts of Africa whilst they're bringing these projects about. But it's just encouraging to see how things are gradually improving. I mean, you might say, well, after 40 years, isn't it a shame that we're still needed at all? And sadly, we are very much still needed. But you can see that in the cities and in the towns, things are getting better. But it's in the rural parts or the remote parts where we work that very little has changed, quite honestly. And I was saying earlier, news that foreign aid is being reduced makes the kind of work that we're doing, I think, all the more important. But sometimes we can get over there, and one of the trustees, we have four trustees, one of the trustees spent his holiday in Uganda 2 years ago, so he funded his own trip, but he spent the whole time going around different projects that we've been doing. Uganda is one of the countries that we've worked a lot in, and he came back absolutely brimming with stories and ideas of the different work that had been done. So what I'll do now is just show you some of the projects that, or some of the types of projects that we've been doing. Perhaps the most common is shallow wells for rural villages. These are normally 5 to 25 metres in depth. Obviously, the shallower it is, the easier it is to make the borehole and bring the water up. And there's a number of different ways in which the water can be delivered, but it's usually a hand pump, and it takes a little bit of effort and a little bit of time to fill a jerry can full of water. I mean, it makes us realise that we just take it for granted that we can turn the tap on and water flows, or we can pull the flush and everything, you know, flows away. But, you know, these things are very much special. And the fact that, you know, you don't have to carry your water on your head for 2 to 3 hours every day makes such a big difference to people's lives. The other aspect of it is maintaining the wells, because it's all very well to provide one, but if it then falls into disrepair, then unfortunately the good can be undone very quickly. So we do training, or we make sure that all the wells that are there include training for the maintenance of those wells that have been constructed. We've actually done a number of projects in relation to schools. Very often you will find that a school is the first building in a village which actually needs to have a well in it that serves the school, but then it also serves the whole of that particular village and perhaps a wider community. So the benefits can spread. But also important from the hand washing point of view and the sanitation point of view, because if we can provide those facilities, then the chances of pollution or disease do become reduced. It's quite interesting, actually, that more recently we've had organisations who are building schools in remote villages are coming to us and saying, can you provide the well for this particular school? Because African governments are actually making it conditional on permission for a school to be built, that they have to have a water source. I mean, that's a good thing, but it means that in some cases a school doesn't happen if they can't provide the water source. So we become a sort of key part of the whole package that enables that school to be delivered. And it's also interesting that there are a number of schools now coming forward, or over the last few years that have been coming forward, for special needs children that could be disabled. There's a picture from one at the top right there. And also, we've recently done a school which is specifically for for deaf children, I should say, in Uganda. Rainwater harvesting is another aspect that we've become quite involved with. In some parts of Africa do have good rainfall for certain times of the year, and then you get a drought period. So it's fairly simple to find a way of collecting and then storing the water which is coming onto the roofs of the buildings, and then keeping it so that it can then be used over the following period of drought, especially when there's no groundwater easily available. Another aspect is there are still certain parts of Africa where there are wars, or there have been, and what happened in Rwanda, for example. You remember when there was the terrible problems in Rwanda. A lot of refugees have been in neighbouring countries, and then when they come back very quickly, they need water supply in the communities where they're coming back to. So we've been involved in areas of conflict on certain times. And then more recently, conservation. A lot of parts of Africa, as you probably know, also South America, but particularly in Africa, are under threat with new developments. And we've been working with an organisation known as JEGME, that's the acronym, but it's the Joint Efforts for Green Mountain Initiative, where they are not only preserving the wildlife and the vegetation, but also the way of life of the people that are living in some of the more remote areas. But again, they can't really survive properly without water. And we have been involved in, the top one is a spring protection we provided for a community in the Buindi Impenetrable Jungle National Park Conservation Area. But also, again, with water storage. You can see that's a project which has just been completed, actually, in the last couple of weeks on the bottom right there, providing water storage in what's clearly a beautiful area, you know, with dense vegetation. We also, at the same time as doing working with charities that we've built up a relationship with. We do like to introduce new areas and new charities from time to time. And sometimes these are in quite difficult places. Burkina Faso, for example, is a landlocked country, and it's rather neglected and to a certain extent unknown in many parts of the world. But we have done a project in Burkina Faso, in an area where you can see lawless gangs roam the northern areas. And the government itself has little control, but it's somewhere where we have worked and produced a project. Also, agriculture. We have a charity called Amigos, which has been developing training for students to come and then go back to their village so that they can teach agriculture to the villagers. But at the same time, of course, for agriculture, water is needed again for irrigation very often. So we've been supporting that community. And then natural disasters. We hear of, well, we see natural disasters in all parts of the world, and Africa is not immune from that. Cyclone Freddy, for example, hit Malawi 2 years ago, and there was huge flooding. And when it comes to a part of the world that has very little at the beginning, then everything can be swept away, including the borehole. So, you know, inundated with water, but you have no supply of fresh water. We had, just 2 years ago, we had an emergency call. Can we get some funding out to repair boreholes in Malawi? And fortunately, we had just had a fundraiser the previous weekend, so we were able to get money out urgently because it was needed so quickly. And over the following period, we've actually been able to repair 48 boreholes in different villages as part of the whole recovery process, really, from the effects of that cyclone. Now, when Mary contacted me and said that you were considering using or supporting Wilmslow at Wells as part of your Lent giving project, she said it would be rather nice if there was a specific target that you could aim for. So, she mentioned that you were looking at something around about £650-£700 would be a good target to aim for. And so we got in touch with an organisation called Aid Africa. In fact, it's the same organisation that was the one that was working in Malawi, borehole repairs after the cyclone hit it. But they're still very much involved there. And they've highlighted one which they think would be a wonderful project to pursue, because it's for a school. There's a borehole which has failed. They've been there surveying and been able to make temporary repairs to this borehole, but it's not going to last. I mean, it's only got a very limited service. The school in Luani has 1,800 students, but it also is the primary water source for 340 households. It's also an area where waterborne disease is quite prevalent, so it's so important that they get this borehole recovered. They've just submitted this proposal to us. The only problem is that it's a little bit more expensive than the one the figure that she mentioned. It's actually £907 that the project is involved with. But there are two others which are a bit less, so if it doesn't get to that amount, we can still say that you've funded a complete project there. But that just seemed a very good project for you to be aiming for. And we could certainly provide back to you all the feedback that comes from it once that project becomes a reality and they start to work on it. So with that, I would just like to say thank you very much for listening, and I hope you find it informative.
Thank you. So I just want us to think about that project and everything David said, but just to look at that gospel reading we heard this morning. Jesus goes up the mountain, and there's this wonderful experience for the disciples, isn't there? And then he comes back down, and the following section of Luke's gospel tells us, and then he healed a boy who was overcome by an illness. He was straight back into ministry. The disciples weren't allowed to stay on the mountain. They had to come back to reality. And I think that was said in that hymn that we sang, "'Tis good, Lord, to be here. Come with us to the plain." And God spoke, the voice of God was heard there. "This is my son, the chosen one. Listen to him." And there's resonance there of Jesus' baptism, where that voice is heard, "This is my son with whom I am well pleased." So what is it that pleases God? What is it that, why was he pleased with Jesus? Why should we listen to Jesus? And at the heart of Jesus' ministry, of course, as you know, was compassion and to help people in need. They'd seen this glory on the mountain, and then he went down and was back into helping others. I think it would be tremendously pleasing to the Lord of life if we could aim high with this target. And I think it's doable because we've got friends, we've got neighbours, we've got relatives who we can invite to the coffee morning. And the sum of smaller parts can make a very big sum indeed. And I'm sure that will have a massive, massive benefit to those who will receive that. And it's good to know, you know, that we can get that feedback and actually see where that target's going to go. Who we're going to see who's going to benefit from that. And also that you're a charity that is completely run by volunteers. So there's very little waste. The money is put to good use. So thank you very much, David, for sharing that with us. And we will continue with Endeavour in Lent, which begins on Wednesday. Thank you.